could do the Byron Katie thing for an hour or two, and you can look at it just right here.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think,
well, I think I would say it's a sign of wisdom when you just don't want to hear anyone process anything about anything. You know, it's like you have to, my bias, of course, maybe because I'm hopeless.
You're burnt out.
Yeah, I'm burnt out and helpless. But you just, you know, to process the drama field of the human experience is just not interesting anymore at all. And the myopic, the myopia that it exudes is steeped in absolute fantasy. The fantasy of time and the fantasy of self and the fantasy of a life that works for you somehow within the context of conformist reality. Or that you would benefit from more happy, you would benefit from more success, you'd benefit from taming your mind, from getting over all of the belief systems and episodes of harm that punctuate your personality and the way that you engage in life.
Yeah, but like if you, let's do a little pebble thing. You say something to me, and I react.
Yeah.
Right? My compulsion is to spend some time processing that.
That's right.
I don't want to do it for days and weeks.
Yeah.
If I get stuck in it.
What up, Beth?
If I get stuck in processing something, because I do, I have compulsion to process. But then I'll
like
read
dark
something or come here and like, I'm so over that. Anyway, but I do get drawn to the need to process.
Yeah.
But it's not as compulsive or interesting as it once was.
Okay.
I still
there you go.
Get drawn to it.
Sure.
And
right.
I still engage in it.
Right.
But I get done with it.
Yeah, that's right.
Sooner rather than later.
That sounds fine. I mean, I would think that people that were, studying the Byron Katie process as a life methodology or an intervention of some kind would like that to occur for them, right? They would still process, but they would process more efficiently, more constructively, with less trauma, with less collateral damage, and then get over the, the issue more quickly. With less scar tissue.
How many years do you think that would take?
Pretty much a lifetime, yeah.
Anybody
yeah.
know?
Exactly.
So something coming up.
Well, sure, yeah, of course. Yeah. Well, but again, it's, you could say it's how radical is your context for your present experience? That's the real question. Your past experience, you can maybe get a glimpse that it's completely unsatisfactory. It's a random cathartic assignment that appears to have shaped or influenced your persona, your present reactivity, right? Your future experience is, obviously an absolute myth. Even if you're Nostradamus, it's an absolute myth.
Mm-hmm. Oh, in the room.
Say his name, and the lights start changing.
He's like, "Hello." Yes.
You just can't get. You just can't seem to go anywhere where there aren't spooks.
Can't get any privacy around
There's
here.
Spooks everywhere. So the only, let's say, laboratory that makes any sense has to be your present experience. No one has made any success unwinding the past or attempting to repeat it with any satisfaction.
Well, that's not true. That's all with the landmark is involved in. Unwinding the past.
Yeah.
I paid more and more money for
yes.
traveled further for varieties of
right.
recapitulation.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Sure. That's right. Recapitulation. Yeah.
in front of an audience.
Right. Uh-huh. Well, again,
I can go on for a long time.
I know. I still, you know, not to deny the utility of those kinds of things or the money spent to do them, but
my God.
Even if you recapitulate something and recapitulate it satisfactorily, you remain, you know, under the influence of a very, you could say, profound and encompassing set of miragi.
Mm-hmm.
And the chronic sense of insecurity and insufficiency and curiosity or enthusiasm, it could be, you know, it doesn't have to be negative. It could be, you know, so positive emotion or negative emotion that is driving your interest in what you call your life.
Whatever it is something to do with you.
Yeah, whatever it is. And so then one might ask a question. You could say relatively few do, but occasionally someone asks a question like, I am just not satisfied by myself, with myself. I don't care if I'm having an up day, a bad day, or in between, whether I'm processing, you know, in an egregious manner or even processing more smoothly. Some kind of, you know, even call it a crisis, though it doesn't have to be a big demonstrative one. It could be, you know, like a kernel of a crisis. Has to appear for you to ask a deeper question about the context of your experience. Otherwise, you know, you'll do Landmark, you'll do Byron Katie, you'll do Scott Killaby, you'll do Adam Chaxfield, you'll do and do and do and do and, you know, you'll do exercises, you'll do Thich Nhat Hanh, you know, whatever you do. And who's to say whether the compilation of spiritual and secular effects of your life grants you whatever peace or sanguinity it is that you think you're looking for? I mean, that's just a big question. You know, you can run to Pebble Hill and Gurus and Circle of Miracles, and you can do, you know, Byron Katie work with skilled people or unskilled people, where it's actually more fun because then it turns into a total fucking stew of chaos. You know, you can drink and take drugs and just continue to enroll in engaged enmeshment, engaged Buddhism, engaged codependence, being self-consumed until the cows come home, and the cows never come home. And it's, whose business is it but yours, you know, for you to ask the question of yourself. How you doing? How's it going for you? You know, are you living life the way you want to live your life? And I'm not even suggesting you should be living it any differently or any better or any worse. I mean, who gives a fuck about the way that you're living your life? You think that freedom, one thinks that freedom is going to be found when you optimize your relationship with your life according to what you think the measure of joy or satisfaction or success or friendship or relationship or cash or peace of mind or, you know, ayahuasca journeys is. And who gives a fuck? You see, we're so self-consumed with experiencing through the lens of I, me, my and the mirage of it that, I mean, I would say if you really ask authentically and sincerely of your own experience, you would say, fuck if I know. You just wouldn't know. And yet you can feel yourself driven by all kinds of inner voices, inner gurus, inner authorities, various schizophrenic parties that live at your, you know, live at the tea table inside your own head, that are giving you advice and telling you what to do and what not to do, that are checking in with you all the time and seeing how you're doing, whether you're happy, whether you're unhappy, whether you fucked up, whether you got it right, how you've promised yourself you're going to do it better the next time, how you're going to craft, carve, sculpt, file down, polish off every fucking thing that happens to you so that you can have some kind of optimal, be an optimal satisfier. And having succeeded at that, even though we don't even know what that means, you then, oh, I'm good. But look at yourself. I'm not singling you out. Look at ourselves. Excuse me. What the fuck? Where have you landed? What do you got?
A nice resume.
Okay. You could have a nice resume, a nice CV, a nice one thing or other thing. I have no idea. And that's why I have to ask this question of ourselves, of myself, with, you know, in your earshot, right? How wild is the context of your present experience? If you're still going human on this, you know, well, fuck you. Who gives a fuck about you? Nobody gives a fuck about you. You don't really give a fuck about yourself. You're just driven, you know, by forces that you have no control over to work this as a human. God, that sucks. It totally sucks, because then you're going to just keep piling whatever shit you can pile onto yourself to try to satisfy yourself as a human, as a body, as a creature. As your health declines and your wealth declines and your eyesight declines and your hearing declines, you know, and your capacity for orgasm declines or interest in it, and everything fucking declines, and you're still trying to figure out how to satisfy and optimize this as a human, as a body, in a life. Right? And, you know, and the maggots are just sitting there going, we'll wait. We're good. We're fucking patient. We'll wait. So it's not that we're trying to even land in a condition or a position that is somehow ultimately satisfying spiritually or otherwise. The question is, what the fuck would you like to accomplish with all this? and are you pleased to continue to be living under the influence of human in time, body in time, consciousness in time, entertainment? It's fucking exhausting. It is. It's just a neurotic field of total exhaustion. Yeah, no, with the occasional show thrown in, you know.
The Truman Show.
Yeah, it's a new episode of whatever that show in England with the big house and everybody's running around. Yeah, another episode of Downton Abbey. Yeah.
That's beautiful, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, those people haven't gotten anywhere.
They're convinced.
Yeah, I'm like looking into these characters going, what do you got? What do you got? And it's like, I don't know, they just sit down for dinner.
Always, constantly.
I know.
Get dressed up.
Yeah, but I'm like, what? Why would anyone watch this? I mean, the library's nice, the carpets seem great, you know. But it's just... So I don't know where to go with all this. I mean, you know, some spiritual guy, young gal, whatever, they have a waking up experience, you know, they have terrible depression. You know, their parents throw foods a plate at the room. They sit on a bench for a year. I mean, what the fuck? Who gives a shit about any of this crap? You know, we create one celebrity after another. You know, Eckhart Tolle's a celebrity, and Ramakrishna's a celebrity, and Byron Katie's a celebrity. You know, and then new celebrities come on the scene. You know, this young Asian woman or da-da-da-da-da-da. And we're just like, oh. You know, one celebrity replaces another. One exciting novelty replaces another. You can't even remember the, you know, half the teachers or books that you've read about all this crap. You're full to the brim with ideas that other people have given you through the written word and the spoken word and the video and the Twitter and every other fucking social thing. And you're just absolutely overdone with everybody else's ideas, which mean nothing. And yet we're ongoingly consumed with this incoming pile of everybody's ideas, everybody's clever remark, humorous remark, cogent, pithy, spiritual, you know, salutation. What? And how is that helping you? How is that nourishing you? How is that feeding you? Everything is secondhand. Your own consciousness is secondhand. That's why you're so bored with yourself. You are secondhand. Everything you think and feel and feel about the way you think and think about the way you feel, think about the way you think and feel about the way you feel and feel about the way you think and then think about it some more and then feel some more and think about that and then do a JYN. You're like, who gives a fuck about me? I am totally the most boring person I've ever met. Driving myself insane with how I think and how I feel and then how I feel and then how I think. Who gives a fuck? But you seem to be stuck, right? You seem to be jammed into a fucking consciousness jail cell where you just can't seem to get out of how you think and how you feel and how you feel and how you think. And then the next fucking book you're going to pick up just so you can get 5 minutes of relief from yourself. But then you're back in secondhand information. So you can't have an original experience ever. And it's got to be driving you crazy. You're like, is anything new? Is anything fresh? Is anything real? Is anything authentic? Can anything feed me? Can I have a moment of intimacy, of peace, of expansivity, of call it, you know, a gratitude which transcends, you know, whatever happens to me as a human? Can I get out of this box? Do I want to get out of the box? Do I even realize there's a box? Can't wait to go to the next JYN work end and whip up some Byron Katie shit so I can ask 4 questions and turn it around like the hokey fucking pokey. Fuck.
I'm thinking about that post you have with the kitty, and I said something like, the experiment begins when you close the box. And I kind of feel like I'm the cat in the box.
You are the cat in the box.
You know, I don't know if I'm coming or going or alive or dead or rotting.
That's right. You really don't know. Yeah, you don't know. You're the cat in the box and the cat in the hat. What do you know from moment to moment? What do you know? You're just swarming in a bunch of secondhand news. Your whole consciousness is appearing to you as a bunch of old, dead, tired, conditioned, repetitive, secondhand news. And yet we seem to be fascinated in how I feel and how I think and how I feel about how I think and how, and you're like, but there's nothing new in me. Even my shadow side has gotten boring. Even all that prurient shit that used to get me up, you know, in the morning. Oh, my God, I can't rely on it anymore, even. Even my shadows failed me. God damn it.
Boy, that's desperate.
You see how desperate it can be? Yeah. Even when your secret persona isn't even giving you a lift anymore, you're like, oh. It's pretty much like Lurch. Wasn't he always just like, he had it going on.
No, I like
my people.
So, you know, unless, as long as you misdiagnose, which is what we do, then your approach, your remedial approach is going to fail because you've misdiagnosed. Because you think this is something. You think it becomes you. You think it can work out better once you graduate from XYZ workshop or get the certification or the brown jacket or the lamp or whatever they're giving away this week. You know? Hey, I'll give you 7 precepts for 5. Pay for 5, I'll give you 7. Pay for 10, I'll give you 15. You can make all kinds of vows and commitments about what you're going to do and what you're not going to do, which include the clothes you wear and the food you eat and, you know, where you vacation and whether the kind of car you buy. I mean, right, there's 1,000 things that you can contribute to the sustainability of the species while everything is going down the toilet faster than you can scream, Mr. Wizard! But that's still cool, you know. But we are clinging. Just maddeningly clinging to some kind of relevance, something to believe in, something to hold on to, something to commit to, something that defines us, something that sets us apart in some way from, you know, the rest of the morally and ethically bankrupt society, the morally and ethically bankrupt culture. We want to be set aside somehow. We can't wait to wear that next piece of clothing or that next badge of courage or have that next spiritual experience which gives relevance to our meaningless set of ideation, of ideas. And somehow we want to be satisfied in all this. I want this to work out. I want to be, you know, my version of Supermom. I want to have some kind of satisfaction, some kind of finality. You know, the correct philosophy. The best guru out there, if there was one, right? I want to be a student of the best guru, and failing that, I want to be the next best guru. I want to have a temple. I want to wear my loincloth into the dining chapel.
Barefoot while smoking a joint.
Nice. When you really ask someone, you know, in whatever intimacy you're capable of, and that's variable from moment to moment, right? What do you want from all this? What? We don't even really know. Or we have some idea of what it is we think we want, or what would be an ultimate satisfier, or what we'd like to accomplish spiritually, secularly, in whatever way that we think will be our homecoming. I want to be the home fucking coming king or queen for a day, finally, for the rest of my life until I die, but hopefully that will never happen. And so maybe I want to join the Kabbalist cult and become immortal. It didn't work for Rabbi Berg. He's fucking dead. Even though he was selling it while he was alive, and some of these young people that believed in him were, you know, buying it. Maybe he's immortal someplace else. You know, on the Bahamas. In the Bahamas, just pulling cash out of the sand, which is what he told me once. Pull cash right out of the sand. I said, sounds good, Rabbi. We manipulate.
Your conventional rabbi, was it?
No, he was not conventional. No. To his credit, he was not conventional. Yeah. Yeah, one of his sons ended up with some sexual harassment lawsuit, and I mean, it was just a mess. I mean, it was an interesting piece of chaos, the Kabbalah Center of Los Angeles. An interesting piece of chaos.
Depression going on in the minds of this group, probably.
Well, again, you see, we are so vulnerable. We're so vulnerable because we're nothing more than a set of inconvenient truths, to quote a former vice president. What are you really? You see, that's why if you misdiagnose, you're fucked. And we tend to misdiagnose. We are a compilation of inconvenient half-truths. And that's what becomes the stuff of our so-called suffering. And that's what we're trying to remedy. But that's misdiagnosis. And that's why there's one snake oil salesman after another. Whether it's, you know, whether it's Decades of a Landmark or Spring Ahead or whatever that was, Life Spring or Byron Katie or Thich Nhat Hanh, you know, you name it. The Course in Miracles, yeah, you name it. It's just one pile of snake oil after the other, and everyone's promising some kind of grandeur, you know, some kind of remedy from the humdrumity of my life.
I think the smart ones don't even tell you what the promise is.
The smart ones probably would not.
They're articulated promise. You don't need to do that.
No. Well, that, see, now you've turned the corner on misdiagnosis to a reconsideration of the authentic diagnosis, right? Yeah. And that can take a lifetime, and that's a magical day when you start to withdraw from the inertial force of your misdiagnosis and reconsider the entire context in which you find yourself living. Now that's something new. That'll hold your attention for a little while. Then you have the possibility of withdrawing from every manner of ameliorative, which keeps you in the game having a constructive future to really rethink, re-feel more like it. The nature of your present experience, the content and context of present experience, to unwind it, to recast or reconsider what it is or isn't, rather than presuming a misdiagnosis and then running into the snake oil world. Yeah. Because most Buddhism, you know, and ancient palliative, keeps you in snake oil world. Even though it, as does Course in Miracles and so many of these other programs, have cogent vocabulary. Oh. I mean, Werner kicked everybody's ass, drop-kicked everyone straight into heaven by using profoundly provocative contemporary vocabulary based on the wisdom of the ancients and, you know,
combine quantum mechanics.
Threw that in, why not?
Yeah.
You know, furniture sales, quantum mechanics, it's all the same. Yes. Throw it in.
Soirees at his house. I mean, enough money.
Yeah.
The conversation parties.
Paid salons.
Yeah.
Salons by donation. Yeah, whatever. Right. If all this shit worked, considering how many billions of dollars are spent on it, and how many people are enrolled in it,
you think there would be a result.
Show me the deliverable. Show me the deliverable. You know, I was trying to get a new client today, and they were like twisting me up into a fucking knot. We're only going to give you this much money so that after that you'll give us an explicit thing of what the deliverables are, not to exceed this, and da-da-da-da-da, I want a legal agreement. And I was like, I'm dead. You killed me. I wrote back. I said, look, I just work. I just get the job done.
Right.
You're burying me in mistrust. Literally burying me in mistrust. And if that's all you got, how can I help you? You know?
So that was the end of that.
We'll see.
Yeah.
That's hard to know. Sometimes they're like, that's strange.
Yeah.
You know? Or sometimes they insist on, you know, this, it's like squeezing your cojones as tight as they possibly can so that you can't even function. Right?
Mm-hmm.
To protect what? To protect them for what? $4,000? $3,000? What's the point? You know? I mean, I could see that happening if someone was going to lay down $50,000, you know, and do a massive project with you or you know, five times or 100 times that. But I mean, talking about petty cash, someone has to grab my cojones and come on. Grow the fuck up. But that's what it's like.
Try when they're doing that for $100.
Yeah, people will do it for $100. I know they will. They'll do it for $100.
I think I do it for $100.
Yeah.
Want $100? What am I getting?
So I spoke with a friend. I may have mentioned this at a breakfast or something. I spoke with a friend, and he, you know, the stock market's gone south recently, and he was a little upset about, you know, a little bit of shaving there. He wanted to sell his position in a mutual fund. The company delayed the sale of the mutual fund, so they clipped him another, you know, $3,000, let's say. You know, $3,000 that he should have been able not to lose after he had decided, I'm getting out of this fund because I'm uncertain about the stock market. But he was upset about it. You know, he was upset about the loss, upset about the delay, upset about that money. And I was like, well, okay, well, here's what we do. So go to the bank, withdraw the same amount that the mutual fund company screwed you for. In tens. You know? Get, how many tens is that? $300? $3,000 in tens is 300 tens, right? Mm-hmm. Get $310 bills and walk up and down your local cities and hand those fucking things out. Just hand them the fuck out. Guy on the corner, gal at the grocery store, just fucking hand them out and see if you can get a selfie from time to time. And that just changed the whole frame. Instead of being a victim that lost, you know, XYZ dollars at the hands of an unscrupulous, you know, mutual fund company, all of a sudden that person became an angel sitting on a miraculous pile of abundance, simply handing it out. And I mean, the whole universe changed. The whole universe changed, right? Why is the culture, the global culture, seem to be represented by and influenced by the worst of us? Why is that? Why don't we see generous hearts and generous spirits and crazy artists and sustainability gurus, you know, running the world, linking arms and singing a big kumbaya fucking ya, let's kick the shit out of this. No, instead the worst of us have become, right, the political capital, the captains of industry, right, the governor of Michigan.
The models for behavior.
Yeah, that who's modeling behavior in the global culture is the worst of us.
All the cocksuckers.
And how did all the cocksuckers get all their power?
They're newsworthy. That's it. I mean, you know, they're newsworthy, and you've got the PR people that promote, and you've got news people that promote, and they get.
There's no answer to this.
Yeah,
it's absolutely, what do you call those questions that are not rhetorical? It's a rhetorical question. Yeah, there's no answer. But what we see, let's call it on the global scale, on the cultural scale, is no different than what's running your show, what's running your own misdiagnosis. It's the same. Take a shortcut. One for you, two for me. But this we do schizophrenically. Within our own psyche, you know, one for me, two for me, one for you, two for you. It's the same. So, I would say, yes.
So, is there then a universal whole in the psyche of humans? Given that they can't handle the rawness of the moment. So we there's a denial of that through
there is
compensation.
Yes.
In some
course.
Kind of compulsive behavior.
Yeah. Denial, compensation, compulsive, right?
Right.
Sure. Yeah. I mean these are all
that's what's locked into the structure that we
operate. Yes. It's impossible to diagnose. Mm. But if you were looking at plausible symptoms, those fit.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Because you can, as you look around, it looks pretty common.
That's right. That's right. We are impossible to diagnose. Mm. The Buddha was mistaken. Krishna was mistaken. Ramakrishna was mistaken. Muji was mistaken. Bikram, he owes $6.5 million. That's how mistaken he was. You know, in sexual whatever lawsuits. You know. That's an expensive mistake. Thich Nhat Hanh is mistaken. This is a pretty interesting conundrum to be in.
Yeah.
I mean, actually, it's kind of a thrilling, if not, you know, warmed over conundrum to be in, because we just 86'd every expert that's ever lived. Wisely so. With due affection. You know, if Ramakrishna were here, I'd be first in line for his feet. You know. And he is here, so I am first in line for history. You see, so with all due affection, nobody is refused, but everyone is mistaken. Jesus was mistaken. They're all mistaken, because for you, they're all secondhand news. I mean, if it turns out that you have a miraculous invitation by the Lord Christ that takes your heart away and gives you immaculate peace between now and the day you die, I'm not worthy. My hat's off to you. And I wish that happens to you if you wish that as well. I mean, you know, I'm not trying to interfere with anyone's absolute emancipation here. Whether through the heart of Christ or the heart of whomever. It could be Jim Jones, just easy on the Kool-Aid. Well, once you're 86, all the experts, all the promises, all the accusations of sin. All the accusation of sin. What the fuck is left besides whatever present experience is or isn't, and however it may or may not be appearing to the likes of whoever you think or don't think you are? All of which is a moving target of arbitrary assignment. No matter what's appearing as you, in you, with all due sincerity, with the Ark of the Covenant, it's what exactly? It turns out not to be that reliable a guiding principle. Any idea that you have, any impulse for framing your present experience, content, context, why, the wherefore, the outcome, the consequence, the possibility of it changing somehow, spiritually, secularly, through practice, through purification, is all one. It's just a randomly appearing contrivance that holds your loyalty for one or two seconds, and then you're on to the next thing. Even though you can, you know, build a life of faith in Christ, you can build a life of faith in Hashem, you can go to synagogue every Sunday or Pebble Hill every Sunday, you can hold hands and do angel washes, you can become an ayahuasca, right? Meaning that you go down to South America or somewhere, let's say in Doylestown, and you know, you become a purveyor of ayahuasca parties, and everyone has miraculous spiritual experience under your care. You could become a martial artist, you know, you can become stuff. Nobody has the right to tell you what's wrong with you. No one has the right to tell you what you should be interested in accomplishing. I mean, at all. So it's whatever it is, and who knows what it is, as if it were anything at all, that's up to you. It's kind of up to you. Because you're just improvisationally appearing from moment to moment to moment. You're not the victim of anything. There's no actual consequence, though the biological imperative certainly seems rather robust for as long as it seems and feels rather robust. But you'll notice you don't really become anything. You don't get anything.
Nothing is what we are.
And whatever it is that you might get or might become, well, that's not going with you, you know, as we lower you into your sepulcher or wheel you into the flames.
Popcorn
with popcorn, unpopped popcorn in your sphincter.
That
was a good one.
Beth knows all about it.
A whole bunch of unpopped popcorn.
So what becomes of a mind when you're not trying to remedy anything? You're not hell-bent on figuring out why things sucked it the way they suck. You're not committing yourself to a path of remediation.
Or you are.
Aren't we all occurring, and we are all occurring within a context?
Well,
the experience is not happening over there. It's happening here.
Yeah. Kind of. Who knows?
Well, this is a context right here.
If it is one,
yeah.
Yes. It. Yeah, I mean, is it one? Does it need to be one? And maybe it is one and not one at the same so-called time. Were there any of that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right.
It's just so strange. Our being is already completely organic.
Mm-hmm.
And no representation is required. Without insisting on one or a thousand tickles or hints of representation that turns context into content or content into context.
We don't need to do that. I'm just,
yes.
I'm suggesting we, all I'm talking about is context.
Yeah.
Not content.
Yeah.
That's just interpretive.
Yes. And context has no boundaries, so it's you can't even call it context.
Well,
you see?
Theoretically.
No, no, not theoretically.
That's where the problem begins.
Yeah, that is exactly where the problem begins.
How do we get there?
You emerge theoretically. Everybody does, right? Every human being that has a feeling or a thought about something has emerged theoretically. Because actually, and I don't know what that is, I'm not claiming anything, thank God, but actually, were there an actually, and were we capable of, you know, getting a bead on actually, what exactly would it reveal? Well, pretty much this, but we don't know what this is.
Yeah.
And there is no context.
That's beautiful.
Okay. Sign me up.
Bam.
Boom, bam, Ramakrishna's feet. Sign me up. Yeah, sure, it is beautiful. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, fuck. This is some kick-ass shit, man. This is wild. But it's funny that, you know, the feeling, the sentiment, the, you know, the revelatory quality of it is clearly present. But you wouldn't go yabbering about it from the point of view of human. You wouldn't yabber about it from the point of view of accomplishment. Mm. You wouldn't yabber about it from the point of view of, you know, some kind of philosophical endgame. The beauty is that you don't know what it is,
mm-hmm.
ongoingly. There's no point, there really is no point in some kind of biographical data. Like so many spiritual teachers seem to be so interested in sharing.
Mm.
This is not about anyone, including accomplished spiritual teachers. It's not about them either, least of all them. You know, in that that movie with the machine and thermonuclear, global thermonuclear war, want to play a game? Remember that film? It's years ago.
War Games.
Yeah, thanks. War Games. So War Games, the computer was like, got away from them, right? The system got away from them. And it was about to launch a global thermonuclear program in what it thought was defense.
Oh, yeah, because the only way to help the humans, that was the only way to be compassionate.
No, it wasn't quite that. No, that theme's a good one, too. Yeah, let's kill everyone because that's how compassion works here.
No,
you guys
was,
extinct.
If that was how the only way the computer could figure out a way to
yes.
save the planet.
Well,
or to let,
before,
the most logical,
let's back up.
Like next
yes,
step or something.
Yes, we'll just back up a second. So there was a trigger, and that event I think was a false flag of some kind, not deliberate. But the computer took over because it thought, oh fuck, we're about to go into a conflagration, and we have to outsmart the enemy, and so it was about to commit itself to thermonuclear conflagration, which would have extincted everybody, and the kid. Was went to go get the professor, the designer of the games, you know, to turn it off. And he was like, ah, fuck it. just let him blow it. Just let him blow everything up. You know, he had lost his son or something, and he was, you know, old and wizened, and he was just done with humanity. A wise man, basically. You know, he was a wise man. He was like, fuck it. Let the bombs fly. But the kid was able to plead with him, and, you know, so he came to. And the whole reason I brought this up, and we can go to what happened, but there was a backdoor password. You see, this system was impenetrable. Absolutely impenetrable. Forget it, forget it, forget it. But there was, like, a simple backdoor password, which was, like, Ralph. It was the professor, it was the designer's son's name. You know, Ralphie, whatever it was. So here's a system that no one could crack in a million years. Da-da-da-da-da. Completely impenetrable. Ralphie, want to play a game? Right? So the computer was like, oh, it's you. You know, hello, professor, want to play a game? So the resolution was they hit autoplay. So the computer just ran through every plausible scenario of strike and counter-strike and strike and counter-strike, and there were bombs everywhere and things, total fucking global, you know, nuclear winter, and the computer said, nobody wins. Nobody can win this game. And shut itself down. Anyway, the moral of the story was, we're looking for a really simple password. When we take this on through the snake oil salesperson approach, you're in the midst of a conflagration of global thermonuclear scenarios for you to figure out how you're going to win. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what happens when you go to the snake oil salesman, and I would include the Buddha as one of the finest. Whenever you go to the snake oil salesman, you have hit the button that says, want to play a game, and now your life looks like a conflagration of clever scenarios so that you can come out winning when that's going to fail because it all goes to nuclear winter. Mm-hmm. But we're too stupid, affectionately meant, intended, to see that we go to nuclear winter once we engage with the snake oil king. We just don't see it. We think we're going to get a hit. We're going to get certified. We're going to get acknowledged. We're going to teach. We're going to make a living. We're going to be fucking peaceful, sanguine, mindful, and radiantly present. And we're not. We're just not. I'm telling you right here, right now, not that I matter at all, obviously I don't. Nobody even wants to speak to me if I try to invite myself.
You'll have to be satisfied with stupid.
You'll have to be satisfied with your own nuclear winner. But if you can find, that little backdoor password into the system, you can bypass the nuclear winter of your own miserable soul.
I love it.
And you can discover beauty. With that password, you can bypass the nuclear winter of your own miserable fucking soul, and you can discover beauty. But that's not going to happen once you sign up for snake oil. No one ever accused me of being glib. Beauty is what this is. Not that I'm saying what it is. Not that I have any idea what, how, why, where, when this is. I don't know. I just don't. I can't claim anything for myself, and thank God. I don't have knowledge. I don't have wisdom. I got, what is it called in Italian? There's got to be a good name for it in Italian, you know?
Gossip.
Yeah, right? Gossip. Yeah, you got nothing.
No.
Usually you use that at the card game, right? Yeah, right. Benny, what you got?
You got nothing.
You got nothing. That's kind of sweet. You don't have a biography. You got nothing. You don't know what this is. Why it is, where it is, when it is, how, what to do with it, what not to do with it. Just nothing.
But can you use that phrase in positive or negative? I got nothing. I got nothing.
Of course. Yeah. No? When it's beauty, right? Mm-hmm. If you're lucky enough, and why shouldn't every human being be lucky enough? Let's insist that every human being is lucky enough to have a taste, an encounter, a dignifying moment of their own miraculous beauty. What human being should that be withheld from? And who would dare withhold it? Not this. This wouldn't dare withhold a moment of absolute, right, beauty from anyone.
You've got to put up a lot of shields.
Yes. No question. A lot of shields. All of which are also spontaneously appearing in a, you know, transient plasma. But you see how the mind can kick in and you're hell-bent on trying to resolve. Hell-bent on trying to become, to avoid, to repeat.
You, like, personalized everything.
Yes.
A little stamp.
Yes.
Or something.
Right?
And this, my initials.
And this, you could call it curious sense of personal cogency. What if that goes? Now you don't have a leg to stand on. You don't have anything to claim. Not your sorrow, and not the ending of that sorrow.
It's irrelevant.
That's the password. We're looking for the key, that simple password that permits you to bypass when one is sufficiently mature to use the key, right? You can't obviously force it. I mean, you could hand someone the password, but if they're not ready to hear or feel the password, they can't use the password. So there's no point in, you know, bothering anybody with the good news.
It doesn't work.
Yeah, it won't fucking work. That's right. So there's a again, you know, a kind of miraculous serendipity where you can have a conversation like this one, whatever it implies, and you might like say, oh yeah, a password, a key, right? And just somehow you drop all the guile, all the presumption of yourself as anything. Not a body, not a mind, not a spiritual being, not a secular being. No durability. And no interest in resolving anything, acquiring anything. Having a story to tell to, you know, bat gap fucker.
I don't think anybody wants to give up their suffering.
Few.
A few hit, though, hard to find.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no argument. That's right. That's right.
Well, that's the conundrum.
It's a curious conundrum. Conformist reality, whatever that might be, right?
It requires suffering.
Well, they're one and the same, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, the assertion of context, the assertion of content, the assertion of, you know, physics and the laws of that dictate one's so-called consciousness, presence, availability, eligibility for experiencing at all is all absolutely contrived. It's all nonsense. But that's what we have to be somehow curiously interested and able to see. In other words, if the border or boundary field of our present experience is narrowed down by some kind of inhabitation, then you go running after snake oil salesmen and suffering is your best friend for the long run.
Mm-hmm.
On and off, up and down, in and out, you know, it doesn't have to be constant. I mean, if you're suffering from parasitic infection and you can't get a good glass of water, you know, that can really blow and does for more people than we dare count.
Mm-hmm.
Right? For us, it's kind of like, you know, kind of white suffering, at least, you know, in Doylestown. It's, you know, it's white, white suffering loaded with all kinds of privileges that 99% of the rest of the world will never, ever see. So our suffering is of a kind of, you know, it's like color form suffering. It's like little plastic pieces put on fucking, you know, it's like Barbie doll suffering. You know? Oh, my corset's too tight. Just change it, Barbie.
It's just a coincidence. You know Barbie was in the news today.
Yeah, I read it.
Okay.
I read everything on Barbie. Good sign.
Thinking about Jeff playing with Barbies?
Yes.
Getting a little too hot over there?
Why don't you guys come on over and let's Barbie up? I'll get the chips.
I have Barbies at my house.
Road trip.
You got a real live Ken, don't you? One. No,
we're going to Blue Mystic.
We'll do some FFM role play with two Barbies and a Ken.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Done that.
I'm good.
That's so do that.
I'm good. It's a television station.
Probably when you're older.
We'll key in later.
There's a thing, you know, suffering, though. I brought this up before, and I bring it up.
Okay.
I disagree with the whole concept of suffering.
Why not? You're welcome to, sure.
And I'm not able to articulate it. Sometimes I have what you might call an understanding of why I feel that way. At this moment, I don't.
Yeah.
But I disagree with the whole concept.
Is there a better... something that's deeper than suffering.
I don't actually think suffering is an actual. I mean,
it's the wrong word.
Give her a chance.
It's an opinion. Suffering is an opinion that is applied to a situation. I think.
Well, it has to be.
So therefore, as an opinion, it's not necessarily valid. You know.
Well. Yes, yeah, I mean, why not?
One person can go through the exact same thing and say, God bless my life.
Yeah.
That was the best thing that ever happened to me. Or all different types of things.
There's always all different types of things.
Yes.
So, yeah, you know. One responds as best we can to the vagaries and vicissitudes of our own consciousness and content and experience. And if called upon, we respond as best we can to, you know, the difficulty or unfortunate circumstances of others according to our relationship, our nature, and the permissions that are granted. The success is never guaranteed. You know, I mean, there are times when you've tried your best to be, you know, of assistance to someone and failed miserably. And there's other times you didn't lift a finger and you were a godsend. You know, you're like, what? That's too strange. Right. The geometry of discontent and the geometry of the relief of discontent, whether somatic or whatever it is, it's just too strange for anyone to have an idea about. There's just no guarantee. I mean, even if you do vortex healing and you, you know, sign on to Merlin's, you know, magical whatever, or Matrix energetics and miracles and da-da-da-da-da. And, I mean, you know, all of these contemporary so-called laws of energetics are one form of another of you getting what it is you think you want. And I can tell you, just how much suffering is lurking under the skin of you getting what it is you think you want. Because you're misdiagnosed. If you give yourself, grant yourself, attract to yourself what it is you think you want, I'm telling you, a week later, if it takes that long, you're done with it. You don't want it anymore. Now it's become a albatross around your neck. This which you've craved for so long, God Almighty, is now the worst thing that's ever happened to you. You'd wish you'd had a time machine so you could go back and unthink it. And yet, all of this, so much being sold about get what you want, co-conspiratorize, make what it is that you want, abundance, you know, a pet, some kind of miraculous healing, the end of sorrow, you know. But what is it? It just keeps you in the loop of the snake oil. You'll never be satisfied with the stuff of the world because it's all misdiagnosed.
So if I'm still working on this, right? So that is just an opinion of what you want, and that turns out to be inaccurate as well. If you talk so on the
yes,
side,
it has to be. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
It's just an opinion. It's not accurate.
That's right. Right. It's a condition.
It's not an asshole's opinion who doesn't know shit.
Yeah, that would be me.
Myself.
Right. Yeah, some asshole that thinks he wants something, and then he goes and gets it. He's like, I'm sorry, I didn't really want this. Since this is nothing, at its, you know, call it primordial best. But that doesn't mean it's nothing. It's just never what we think it is. It's never what we want or insist that it is or should be. Because it's evaporative. It's improvisational. It's bizarre. It doesn't last. It has no consequence. It has no implication. It never becomes anything. All it is just a streaming beatitude of absolute weirdness that can be construed according to whatever conditioned nature you seem to be enjoying or suffering from. As a person, as a creature, as a body, as a mind, as the consequence of birth, as having an emotional framework or PTSD experiences or something more or less than that.
As appearing as suffering, as appearing as
yes.
what you want.
Yes, exactly that, exactly. Appearing, 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 appearing is all you got. And that appearing didn't come from anywhere. It doesn't become anything in the so-called moment since there is no moment. And it certainly can't turn into anything because it was never anything in the first place. So it's just appearing, 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 appearing. You got an opinion? Appearing, appearing, appearing.
No,
just give me
like
one opinion.
It's a beautiful mantra, man. It's just like,
it just
obliviates the whole thing.
That's look, here it is. Appearing, 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 appearing. Let's go see the Dalai Lama. Let's not. Appearing, appearing, appearing. So it's the anchoring that bothers us, you see? Appearing on its own terms is beauty. It's a beauty. I mean, it's just it's breathtaking beauty. It's how the fucking Yulia, however that's pronounced. But you see, once you have an opinion, that's the end of it.
Yeah,
just one small opinion.
That's all it takes.
That's all it takes.
It's like, wait a minute.
One small, tiny little pinhead of an opinion about anything, and you are condemned to snake oil.
If you have an opinion, like a mustard seed. So the faith of a mustard seed in the Bible, they're going back, but this is opinionless.
Yes.
Grow into a big tree.
Instantaneously. And when you start to notice, which is a bold shamanic transmutative engagement, it's not trivial. when you start to notice the streaming nature of appearing, and you start to loosen up on the million and one opinions that you think you deserve to have so that this will obey you. One opinion, all of a sudden, this should be obeying you. And what you want or need, what you're capable of attracting, the miracle field that you're capable of turning this into, anything that you think you want this to be sucks. Like as in absolute bullshit. But everyone flocks to all the gurus that say, well, you know, give us your shekels and we'll show you how to turn this into what you want it to be. If you haven't figured out by now that what you want this to be is absolute crap, then you deserve to go to those gurus and part with your money to be taught the lessons so that you can see that you've made a big, big mistake.
I just want to walk across hot coals, though. That's my goal in life.
Yeah, that's a great goal. I got blisters on my fingers.
That's a better goal.
So it's very easy to see in that description that you just said eloquently before, that what is also called the quantum canon.
Okay.
That's all that happens.
Yeah.
There's no naming, there's no, can't pin anything down.
Does Schrodinger's cat go meow? Yeah. Yeah. It's like the physics is okay when it comes to the inanimate building blocks of photonic, if not biologic, life. Even though we're made of that, the physics applies to the inanimate. But I'm a master of choice. I am a master of will. I'm a master of discernment. I am not just some inanimate, you know, pile of meat to which physics might apply. Yeah. Even though if we take the implication of the physics into the heart, right, whatever that suggests, then, yeah, there can be quite a profound, revelation. Yeah. Now, during this, call it a conversation or a diatribe or a monologue or whatever you like to refer to it as,
stream,
nobody has had to do the four questions or turn anything around. No one gives a fuck about how you feel about anything, and the happiest day of your life is when you become the person least interested in it. Because as long as you're trying to resolve your relationship with your thoughts, how far have you gone? You're just going to stay in that fire pit of shit for the long run, even though you may turn out to be a successful purveyor of some body of so-called spiritual wisdom that people are willing to pay good money for. You got Oongots.
That's it. Oongots.
Got a real word.
Oongots.
Oongots. Oongots.
Oh, it's getting a little warm. Yeah. You really don't want to be healed. You know, don't trust me on that one. You don't really want to be healed, because that would suck.
What? Yeah, that's looking pretty good over there. I'll give you 10 bucks for them pillows.
It's a slumber party. you want to be released from the last opinion. You want to get whittled down so bad, so good. You just, fuck, I can't find any opinions.
You have to be willing, I don't know if this is true, but I'm going to say it to actually, it's not you. You might think you have to be willing to be whittled down, but it's the you, you have to lose it. You have to lose the you.
It's
a fallacy. You know?
Because that's the secret bunker, the you.
Yes, we can only speak in paradoxical metaphor,
mm-hmm.
which turns out to be, at best, an evocative poetry, right? To be rid of opinion and to feel, call it the presence of beauty.
What else do we have to work with? I mean, if that's a distinction in the use of language, which has a chance of undermining or quieting all the eyes.
Yes.
All the eye pieces.
Yes.
All the suffering pieces.
Yes.
It is possible to practice that by listening to what you're speaking.
That's what we're
doing.
Yeah. we're lending each other.
Right.
Lending each other, you could say, the gift of our presence, mm-hmm. our gift of being here. The gift of interest, of affection, of possibility. Which is a really wonderful gift. Given freely,
mm-hmm.
nothing held back. Nothing required in return, just, right? If you turn, let's say you turn this sense of self, he who was wounded by the loss of a mutual fund into, right, the most generous guy on the street. So we enjoyed what it feels like to be living in one's own generosity. Not that you have anything to give, or nor is there anyone to give it to. You're just able to feel, to live in your own generosity. And that generosity can be quiet, or become a painting, or a song, or a conversation, or, you know, a wave, something felt. This is an ancient aboriginal circle.
Mm-hmm.
It's always been that. An ancient aboriginal circle from Brahmanic culture, from Vedic culture.
I just made the connection to all the motion in the heavenly spheres.
Ah.
This is what they do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You, sir.
Yes. Yeah.
One wonders if there's ever really been any evolution. I mean, we just, you know, learned language and fine motor skills, maybe, but have we gotten any better at letting go, you know, of just being, you know? I mean, it could be very well be that, you know,
none of it ever happened. Man was, there weren't, you know, any dinosaurs.
Just as able to.
We're going Mormon on this, yeah.
To find, you know, the root of peace.
Yeah. Well, see, what you have is the poetry of appearing, while the greater cosmos hangs out in what appears to be, you know, more ancient and durable forms of aboriginal spiral.
Mm-hmm.
right? Ours is an 80-year, whatever span of spiral.
And the whole culture, the whole human time here, if you will, you know, has just been a thought process.
Absolutely.
You know, it's just a big thought process.
Yeah. Yeah.
It hasn't changed a thing, you know.
Nothing to change. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, any thoughtful person living today should be really fucking nervous, you know, about what appears to be the vector of self-loathing, right? The vector of a declining IQ, a declining morality, a declining ethics, a declining abundance. The manipulation, right, of news and geopolitics and the biosphere itself.
Didn't they just release some report about our trajectory for the end of the world?
We're still on 3 minutes to doomsday.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
I haven't heard about that for a while.
Yeah. That's just a kind of a nice review of all the possible conflagrations that can happen by virtue of the technology and by virtue of climate and, you know, food and overpopulation and, you know, forces that put stress on the sustainability of, you know, species. Yeah, 3 minutes till doomsday. Click, 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 click. Look how capable we are of hanging out in a circle or in the comfort of our own home or rhythm of our own life, the coming and going of our relationships, and take on a million personas. I identify this way, and then this way, and then this way. I relate to you a certain way, and you a certain way, and then I relate a certain way in the supermarket, a certain way at the bank. Road rage is a certain way. All kinds of personalities. Yeah. Did the dignity of emptiness is not an idea? Mm-hmm. It's remarkably substantial considering how unsubstantial it is. Your being, this being, this radiant presence, to coin a phrase, is immersive.
Every once in a while, you get lucky and you put a couple words together that are beyond the dignity of emptiness. It's such a resonance. So awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. It's awesome because it's felt. Yeah. I mean, that's what we're fucking with, or that's what's fucking with us, is the dignity of emptiness. Felt. Take that bar, Katie. Fucking witch. I said, take that, Byron Katie.
Maybe if someone goes to her workshop, you don't want to take it out on the staffer, but you could say, just make up a story and say, I hate Byron Katie's fucking guts, and then you start with the story, whatever.
Turn it around.
Yeah.
Let me see you turn that one around.
Yeah. What are those?
I love her guts.
Chocolate covered almonds.
Chocolate covered almonds?
They're good.
Did you throw one over here?
So there's extra sugar in them, I think.
This emptiness shit makes me hungry. Thanks.
Extra sugar. Sugar.
Cocaine don't make me crazy. Champagne don't make me lazy. Nobody's business but my own.
It feels soft, don't it?
Sugar. I don't think they're.
I took a bunch of almonds, you know, and I'm chewing along, and one was soft, and oh my goodness, it was like somebody squirted motor oil. Like, wow, it was so bad.
Oh, one had turned.
Evidently, it got like really bad. It was that, or it was a large bug.
Might have been a stink bug.
I was close to the stink and it all came out.
Might have been a stink bug pretending to be an almond.
I spit it out. No, I didn't spit it out.
To avoid detection. You have this password. You have this key. This key is the miracle of your own presence, of your own curiosity. And when all of this congested energy that is being misdirected to figure you out, to ameliorate your sorrow, to set a course for a more fond or secure future, when that just is released, something else comes into being. The release of the congestion of self, the release of context, and the release of content inhabiting your full intelligence. It doesn't require time or process or more cogitation or explanation or even cathartic experience for this to reveal itself to itself. You can meditate when you're dead.
Probably not, actually.
Probably not. But you see, we can feel this by simply dismantling the conformist memes and identifications and associations which with what we think this is. Then what it might be, because no one can say what it actually is, has a chance to waft through. So by dismantling the misdiagnosis, by reconsidering, recrafting, backing away, withdrawing from misdiagnosis, something new happens. And that's the password. Not the resolution of anything, not the becoming, not the satisfying of anything, or the healing of anything. Though forgiveness and gratitude and shit like that is, you know, fine when you can get it. You know. Why not? Big deal. But you're going to come to the end of that road. You're going to come to the end of the rope of thinking that you can and should be doing something about this for the sake of your future. You have to get tired of that sooner or later so that you can discover if there might be another.
Those two are good at I wouldn't say generating, but to create a greater sense of emptiness.
Yeah.
But forgiveness.
Yes, yes, yes. Right. Oh, absolutely.
They're good levers, devices.
Mm-hmm.
Get rid of shit.
Yep. Yeah. Good wormhole.
Yeah.
It's strange because it feels like it starts speaking to you in a different language in some sense, but it still sounds and looks exactly the same.
Yes. So
that's why it's confusing, because yeah. It's easy to switch back to that previous filter or whatever.
You absolutely. Mean. Yeah. I mean, you can might notice yourself withdrawing from the familiar grip of how you construct your reality space and the demand that you place on it or what you expect to get from it. So you just start relaxing, you know, and then this becomes a little more unfamiliar, a little more Tinkerbellish, you know. Because you're not inhabiting yourself habitually, right? Your own inhabitation, meaning suggesting your present experience, is a little more light, a little more elastic, like a little more lucid, a little more creative and playful. So now you're not asserting, right, so much. There, you're not trying to remedy so much. You're like, okay, I don't know what the fuck this is. What do you got? What do you got? There's a more, you know, let's call it relaxed relationship with the texture of present experience than the insistence that you're in a world, you know, in a field of continuity, that which is spatial continuity and temporal continuity and purpose continuity and intent continuity and all of these other loci, locusts, locuses, quarrels and corals that bind you. And they only bind you, if they bind you at all, through a dream.
We just keep whipping them up.
And even in our dreams, they bind us.
They can. They can. Yeah. Now, it's a little strange to feel what there is to feel without being bound.
Mm-hmm.
It is a little strange. It's a little
lighter touch.
It's a little marvelous.
Release your peripheral.
Yeah, to feel what there is to feel without being bound. Not to have anything to prove or defend. I mean, I can't imagine that as one feels and becomes acquainted with this, would you want to attract anything at all? Why would you have a desire even for anything at all that would be more suitable to you than your own presence?
Just old habits die, playing hard.
If one is still enrolled in some kind of manifestation, one is a dumb fuck pauper. And we all know what it feels to be a dumb fuck pauper, beggar.
A loud dumb fuck pauper. Sometimes.
Thinking that some kind of manifestation protocol is going to do something for you.
But when you see that,
yes,
pauper, it's kind of funny though too. I mean, it's really not all bad.
Yeah,
it's
yeah. The fool never stops being the fool.
That's great. It's fun. You're going good.
With the cessation of claiming, with the cessation of that, whatever last opinion might still be whirling about that's attracted your attention. Excuse me, manifest what? For whose benefit exactly? The last thing you want to have anything to do with is the myth of becoming. If you were to manifest something, you'd just be on the hook again.
Yeah.
It's just on the hook again.
That's what we think we want, but it's yes. the opposite.
Quite the opposite. What a droll existence. Manifesting shit. Fuck you, Tony Robbins. You possibly have any interest in anything that even hints or smells like a personal biography. In the bosomic crevasse of this beauty, why would you have any interest in biographical data? Did something really happen to you? Just about when? Nothing ever happened to you. Oh, that's good, right? Why beat a dead horse with a...
Sure, your listeners got their money's worth.
Gingerbread cookie. Thanks, everyone.